Did you know that South Carolina was the 8th state to enter the Union? It gained its statehood on May 23, 1788.
Welcome to the Lore of the South. Lore of the South.
Welcome back, y'all. Welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. And, well, we've made it through another year in the Ronaverse. The Earth's gone around the sun one more time, and we're going on, what, 3 years of this pandemic? At this point, it just feels like one really long one. Anyway, who still has Christmas decorations up? Confession time. It's time to get that stuff down. We've got all ours packed away here. Don't be that person that leaves them up year-round. Did y'all enjoy our little holiday jaunt across the pond? I did. I'm a bit of an Anglophile and a tad obsessed with the UK and its long history. Producer Mike and I have been talking about starting a Patreon to help cover the production costs of this little podcasting hobby. And I thought maybe a more far-flung tale once or twice a month might make for good bonus content for Patreon supporters. Y'all let me know what y'all think about that. So here we are in the new year, and we're back in the South. And in episode 35, we're talking about the not-so-sweet Lavinia Fisher, who might have been the U.S.'s first female serial killer. Y'all are going to be able to see some parallels between the Fishers and the Bloody Benders, I think. I guess serial killers, no matter the year, seem to follow certain patterns. So on with the story of the fair Lavinia. Lavinia was born sometime in 1793, but next to nothing is known about her between her birth and when she married John Fisher. The pair owned and operated an inn for travelers known as the 6 Mile Wayfarer's House. The 6 Mile part name came from a kind of mile marker for patrons who were passing through. The inn was literally 6 miles outside of Charleston, South Carolina. There was also a 5 and a 4 mile houses along the route as well. Lavinia was known for her beauty and charm. She and John were very popular with the residents of Charleston. This may have been what had allowed the pair to carry out their home-based crime spree for so long. Lavinia and John would welcome tired travelers into their inn. They would in turn question the traveler on their destination, if anyone was awaiting their arrival. What did they do for a living? Were they traders, and if so, that would lead the couple to believe that their guests might have property worth stealing. Added bonus, if the soon-to-be victim didn't have anyone waiting for them at the end of their journey. No one to come looking for the soon-to-be dispatched, and no one to draw suspicion upon the Fishers. There are many different accounts on how Lavinia would pull off her and John's murders. The first was that sweet Lavinia, always concerned for her guest's comfort, would send her tenant to bed with a nice hot mug of tea laced with oleander. Now, if you're not familiar with the side effects of oleander, let me fill you in. It affects both the heart and the nervous system. It works to slow the heart, lowers the blood pressure, which can lead to unconsciousness or death. As far as the nervous system goes, it works as an all-over depressant that can also lead to unconsciousness and death. Y'all, please don't be doing any experimenting with oleander. It's very dangerous. So John and Lavinia would give the spiked tea time to work, then enter their guest's room. If the traveler wasn't already dead, John would quickly finish him off, while Lavinia would strip the victim of anything of value, whether it was money, clothing, or trade goods. In another more outlandish account, the pair had a special murder room for their guests they planned on robbing. Again, Lavinia would offer poison tea to their guest. This time, they would keep watch and wait for the tea to take effect, and then help their target to their room for the night. They'd see them to bed, and once unconscious, an unseen lever would be pulled. The bed would collapse, a trap door would open in the floor, where the traveler would fall into a pit that some say was lined with sharpened stakes, where they would be impaled, leaving the Fishers to harvest the dead's valuables at their leisure. Reports of missing men began to be filed, and fingers were being pointed at the Fishers. Some townspeople even made claims that the couple were the heads of a local gang of highwaymen that had been robbing farmers and traders trying to enter the city to sell their goods. There was even a report of a neighboring farm to 5 and 6 mile houses that had been robbed of its cow. But due to law enforcement's opinions about Lavinia's sweet nature and her hardworking John, there was no investigation. In February 1819, it became apparent that there were one too many missing men who had passed by the three different mile marker inns. A vigilante mob was formed by some of Charleston's townsfolk. They first reached 5 Mile House, which was becoming known as a hangout for the highwaymen. When the occupants refused to come out, they set fire to the house. They continued on to the Fishers, who complied with the vigilantes and came willingly out of their home. The mob eventually calmed and left one man behind to watch over and to make sure that the claims of the Fishers' innocence were true. It wasn't long until David Ross, the man left behind, knew he was in trouble. Two men entered 6 Mile House. One collared Ross and tossed him into the yard. Ross then tried to re-enter the house to claim his belongings. The first man, who Ross recalled being called Hayward, threatened to blow Ross into the hereafter if he touched anything inside of the home. Hayward and his unnamed partner then began to beat David Ross viciously. And it was about this time that sweet Lavinia and John returned to the house along with what appeared to be the rest of their gang. Two more men and a woman along with them. Ross looked towards Lavinia for help. She only sneered at him and proceeded to choke him and then put his head through a window. Ross somehow managed to wrestle free of the group, though wounded, made his way back to Charleston, where he gave a story to the law in a sworn affidavit. Soon another survivor came forward and gave his report. A traveler by the name of John Peebles rode into the yard of the 6 Mile House and was greeted by Lavinia. Peebles asked for a lodging for the night. Lavinia demurred, saying she wasn't certain if they had anything available, but she did offer to allow the traveler to water his horse and to come in for a bite to eat, and maybe some tea. Peebles agreed and soon joined Lavinia in the kitchen, where she immediately began to interrogate him about his comings and goings, what was his business in Charleston, etc. After the line of questioning, Lavinia suddenly remembered that there was a vacancy available for this weary traveler. She offered Peebles some tea. He accepted, even though he really didn't care for the stuff. He dumped it in a houseplant when Lavinia had her back turned. Upon turning in for the night, Peebles was feeling a tad bit suspicious after the Fishers' interrogations, so instead of sleeping in the bed, he took up post in the chair in the room near the door, just in case one of the Fishers decided to pay him an unwanted visit in the night. Sure enough, sometime in the dark hours, John Peebles was awoken by the bed collapsing through the floor and the Fishers gaining entrance to his room. Peebles escaped through the window, fled on horseback, and immediately reported his experience to the authorities. Upon this second report, law enforcement was dispatched to the 6 Mile Inn. John immediately turned his coat and ratted out all of his fellow gang members, trying to keep his sweet Lavinia's name out of it. However, she, John, and two other fellow highwaymen were then thrown into the old Charleston jail. The police searched the Fishers' property, finding several hidden passages, all holding stolen goods. They also found remnants of some sort of herb, probably oleander, that had been used in Lavinia's teas. In one report I read, it said that the search party also found the mechanism that caused the bed to collapse and the hole to open up to trap and kill the Fishers' patrons. The same report stated that at least 100 remains were found in the basement. Oh, and out back was a cowhide being stretched and tanned, the hide most likely once belonging to the cow that was stolen from the neighbor. The Fishers pleaded not guilty but were denied bail. Their partners in crime, on the other hand, were both released pending trial. Upon the Fishers' trial in May, the jury refused their not guilty plea and found them guilty of armed highway robbery. This itself was a hanging offense, so the judge really didn't see a need to bring forth a murder charge as well. The judge held over the carrying out of hanging to allow John and Lavinia to appeal their death sentences. The pair were housed in a 6x8 cell together in the city jail, under slack guard. Their next trial wasn't until January, so this gave the couple plenty of time to plot their escape. They began to tunnel through an exterior wall. They tied their prison linens together to form a rope. Then on September 13, 1819, the pair attempted to make good on their plot. John made his way to the ground safely. Then the linen rope broke, leaving sweet Lavinia trapped alone in the cell above. John couldn't bear to flee without her, and went and immediately turned himself in. On February 4, 1820, the Constitutional Court overturned Fisher's appeal, and they were sentenced to hang later in the month, giving the pair time to get right with the Lord, so to speak. John welcomed the counsel of Reverend Richard Furman and claimed to be a fully converted Christian. Sweet Lavinia, on the other hand, refused to speak to the preacher and even became near combative when it was suggested to her that she should seek forgiveness before she goes to meet her Maker. The pair were removed from jail and brought to the scaffolding on February 18, 1820. The Reverend read aloud a letter written by John Fisher. The letter claimed his innocence and begged the Lord to forgive those who had done him wrong and brought him to this place. He went peacefully to the noose, asking the crowd of approximately 2,000 people for their forgiveness. He went peacefully into his death. Sweet Lavinia, on the other hand, requested to be hanged in her wedding dress, which was allowed. She then had to be forcefully dragged onto the platform, and she never once thought that she was actually going to hang for her crimes. She writhed and fought her guards the whole time. And when it finally did sink in for her that this was it, she was doomed, she let them place the noose around her neck. She then yelled to the horror of the masses, "If any of y'all have a message for the devil, give it to me now, for I shall be seeing him shortly." Then instead of waiting for the hangman to do his worst, she leapt from the platform into the crowd and hanged slowly by dangling over the edge of the stage, a wicked sneer and stare forever fixed upon her face. Lavinia and John Fisher were taken down from their scaffold and buried in the potter's field behind the jail, with no stone to mark their final resting place. Lavinia's ghost was soon spotted wandering back and forth behind the bars in what had once been her and John's cell. Then during the Great Charleston Earthquake of 1836, there was some damage done to the tower block that once housed sweet Lavinia. This damage seemed to somehow free her spirit, and she is now seen quite frequently walking the streets of Charleston. Side note, in this story, it's hard to say where the truth begins and the legend ends. Old records show no reports of hundreds of bodies being buried on the property, nor do they say that the Fishers were ever charged with murder. They were tried and hanged purely on the robbery charges. Did y'all notice the similarities with the bloody vendors? Take in weary travelers, only to brutally murder them in a pit and steal all their worldly goods. I hope y'all enjoyed, if that's the right word to use, this bloody and wild tale. If demon possession is a real thing, it sounded like Lavinia had a strong case for being possessed. She was an evil woman, but John sure did seem to love her anyway. On with recommendations. I am so excited to share this one with y'all. I've been following this Savannah journalist, historian, grave preservationist, and now tour guide for some time on social media. And guess what, y'all? Producer Mike and I get to take her haunted history tour in Savannah in February. I'm so excited to meet her and get to maybe learn some new things about my favorite southern city. Her name is Anoka Edenfield, and girl, I hope I said your name right. You can find her across all social media platforms. I especially enjoy her TikToks. Look for links to all of her social media accounts in the show notes, and I'll also share them on our Facebook account. And I'll definitely share the details of our tour in a future episode, so y'all be looking for that. Speaking of social media, look for us on Facebook and Instagram. I always post pictures to go along with each episode. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and now you can do it on Spotify too. If you want to get in touch, you can email the show at loreofthesouth@gmail.com. Thank y'all for listening, and we'll talk to y'all later on Lore of the South.